You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 18th of May 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com. Well, just before we get into the content of the show today, I'll just remind people that we don't advertise on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube. We don't want to give our enemies a chance to say that we are deliberately trying to offend people by speaking the truth about race, which is why we have our own platform. But of course, that means that we are limited in reaching out to new listeners. So we have to rely on word of mouth. We have to rely on people advertising us on their own websites, on other nationalist websites. Obviously, we want to reach out to other nationalists, particularly civic nationalists and populists, and give them our positive message about race and the reasons why we have so many issues with diversity. And we do have images that we can use, HTML that we can use, which people can paste into their website, which will have a little Radio Albion image and a link embedded in the image, which will take people to the website. So if anybody wants the HTML code for that, just drop by the chat room. And I'll be happy to pass that on. And especially at this time when people are having to stay in at home, they're looking around for things to do, things to listen to, things to watch. So do remember to share the Radio Albion content around with your nationalist friends. Well, last week, there was a really good debate on Patriotic Weekly Review with Mark Collett and Gavin Bobey, which I do recommend people listen to. I expect most of our listeners have already checked it out. It was riveting viewing, to be honest, because Gavin Bobey is a lawyer, and he was making some very good arguments, very good pro-Zionist arguments, and Mark was making very good anti-Zionist arguments. And this is exactly the sort of thing that we need to see more of, I think. Particularly with Mark, who's leading the Patriotic Alternative. And the more people like that he debates, the better he is going to be at debating, and the better prepared he's going to be when he comes up against people like that. And Gavin Bobey does a lot of great work with preventing mosques from being built. But he's a lawyer. I mean, to be debating against a lawyer, that's a real credit to Mark in doing that. But a couple of points were raised in this debate. One of them really is the word Zionist, and Zionist gets used an awful lot, and a lot of the time I think it's not really used to refer to what Zionism actually is. And this is something that Gavin Bobey pointed out. He pointed out that the originators of Zionism, Haim Weizmann and the rest of them, what they were wanting was a homeland for the Jewish people. And that was it. And I don't have a problem with Jews having their own homeland. I support the idea of the Jews having their own homeland. They may mistreat the Palestinians in the land that they've got, but that's their business. That's their country. Whatever they do in their country is up to them. And I think that should apply to every nation. Every people in the world should have their own homeland, and they should be free to do whatever they see fit in that homeland. It should be a sovereign territory. Now, obviously, the problem people have is with Jews that are in other countries advocating for things which are harmful to the host nation. some of the people that do that, some of the organizations that do that, like asking for more immigration, say, they may be fronted by people that are Zionists. They may be fronted by Jews that are not Zionists. So to say that it's a Zionist issue isn't entirely correct, because there are probably plenty of Zionists that live in Israel that couldn't care less about immigration into European countries. They're more concerned about annexing more land for Israel from the Palestinians, say. So it's not strictly correct to say that it is a Zionist problem. One of the issues with Zionism is international Zionism, and when you get big supporters of Zionism, Jews that are big supporters of Zionism in European countries, they will advocate for wars against Israel's enemies. Now that is a legitimate problem with Zionism, but it's a secondary issue. It is really just natural behavior that you would expect from Jews that support Israel. Of course, they're going to want Israel to be protected. They're going to want whatever they can get for Israel. And if they can persuade the host nations that they live among to send money to Israel to fight battles for Israel, then of course that is all to their benefit. And we should expect them to do that. We shouldn't think that is somehow. Not correct of them to do so. I mean, if we were to be living in, say, I'm British, say that I was living in another country, I would want that country that I'm living in to be on good terms with Britain. I would still want the very best for my British compatriots, even though I was living in another country. So we can't see that as being a particularly wrong thing that Jews do. And I don't think we can really link it with the actual Zionist idea of Jews having a homeland. The problem is that our people don't see that is what is going on. They don't see that when we're going to war in the Middle East, it is for Israel's benefit. It is not for our benefit. Getting involved in things like Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, being against Lebanon and Hezbollah. What business have we got out there in the Middle East? The left and the conspiracy theorists would say, well, it's all to do with oil. And that's a cover, really, because it's really just to advance Israel's interests over there. But our people don't see it. And it's the same with immigration. They will hear the humanitarian arguments for immigration. Oh, we need to let these people in. They're just looking for a better life. And our people don't realize that the people that are advocating for this are doing this because they feel more at home in a multicultural society. And they are on record so many times saying this, that they prefer the multicultural society. They feel safer in a multicultural society. They don't stand out as much in a society like that. If Jews are the only minority that is in a society, they feel exposed. If they are just one of many minorities in a society, then they feel much safer. So this is the impulse that is behind it, and we can't really blame them for that. What we can blame is our own people for not seeing that. And this is why we speak out about it, is to get our people to realize that. It's not about getting people to hate Jews. In actual fact, we're pointing out the reasons why Jews behave in the way that they do, and saying, well, that's just a natural instinct for them as a people to behave in that way. Now, I pointed out in a comment about this that because we don't blame Jews for the way that they behave, the Jews themselves will see us as being a particular threat to their power. And I believe that it's in their interests to try and get people to become emotional so that they can say that people are hating on the Jews. If they can get people to hate the Jews for what they do, then that is a success for them, because then they can say this group of people is inciting hatred against Jews. And of course, inciting hatred against races or religions is illegal. And besides that, hate is a very negative emotion. If you are thinking about hate a lot of the time, if you've got a lot of hatred in you, then you're not going to be a very creative person. You're going to be quite a depressed person. You're going to have an angry look on your face. You're going to age prematurely. It is not a good way to be, in a state of hate, in a state of wanting vengeance, in a state of wanting revenge for things. It means that you are going to be distracted. You're not going to be functioning to the fullest extent that you can function. So, as I've pointed out in the past, there are many, many things that the Jews do which are based around temptation, which is based around tempting the host nation to partake in the things that they offer us, gambling, pornography, drugs, alcohol, usury, all these things that you can resist. And our role as white people is to resist that temptation. If that temptation wasn't there, then we wouldn't have the chance to show our virtue by resisting it. Now, I've spoken in the past about Jesus's instruction to love your enemies, and I've pointed out that it means love your enemies within your own people. And obviously you're not supposed to love the enemies of God. In fact, I think it says in the Old Testament to hate the enemies of God with a perfect hatred, or something similar to that. And I've been thinking about this, because when E. Michael Jones is spoken to about this, he says, well, it says to love your enemies. So you love your enemies because you learn from your enemies. It doesn't mean that you don't think they should be punished within the law if they've broken the law, but it means that you accept that they are the way they are. They are a creation of God. There is nothing that happens in the world that doesn't have permission from God for it to happen. And if these people are our enemies, we should still love them for that fact that they are teaching us how not to be. They are teaching us how we should not be acting. We are supposed to be doing something different. And I'm starting to incline to that way of thinking about things. I mean, really, your hatred should be reserved for Satan. Your hatred should be reserved for the author of all the evil, because there is only one author of evil on the earth, and all the wickedness stems from that. I mean, you can look at the Christian identity belief and say that it all stems from original race mixing, which was the cause of the flood. And all the creatures that are born since then, they didn't ask to be born. It all goes back to this one author of all evil. And I think if you save your hatred just for the one author of everything that is evil, you'll be able to lead a much more productive life. It's not good to be caught up with feelings of vengeance and hatred. And that's certainly not what we try to encourage here at Radio Albion. We will explain the problems that we have with diversity, the black and white crime, the Muslim rape gangs, all the problems that we have, and we'll point out that you can't really blame the people that are involved in this for doing these things, because they are things that just come natural to them in their own countries. The only people you can really blame for the situation we are in is our own people. We are the ones that went to war against National Socialist Germany. We are the ones that emancipated the Jews. We are the ones, particularly here in Britain, that invited Jews to come into England after expelling them and having them expelled for 400 years. And we brought them back into England, and we wanted them to get involved in the banking system, because we saw what was happening with Holland and how Holland was making a lot of money. So our greed was at fault there. It was our greed, and because we fell to temptation, we're in the situation that we are in today. We can't change things at the macro level. We can't just change the direction of the political state We can't change things at the national level. But what we can do is change our individual selves and make sure that we are not the sort of people that would fall for those kind of tricks. And I think that's the best that we can do. And that's also the way to lead a fruitful and contented life. And obviously you get involved with other people that have a positive mindset and also wish to resist these temptations and be good people and be the best example of their race that they can be. And then you can get involved in activism. And obviously Patriotic Alternative is an organization like that, which I wholeheartedly endorse here in Britain. Well, I want to also get into some news today as well. There's been confirmation about the blood clots that are being caused by coronavirus that I pointed out about 3 weeks back, that we were having a lot of unexplained deaths that weren't being marked down as coronavirus because they were strokes, heart attacks, what have you. And now it's confirmed that these are actually being caused by coronavirus. In actual fact, 1 in 3 patients who fall severely ill with coronavirus develop dangerous blood clots that may be contributing to their deaths, a leading scientist has warned. The clots, also known as thrombosis, can become fatal if they migrate to major organs in the body and cut off their blood supply. The blockages can trigger heart attacks, strokes, organ failure, and the fatal lung condition pulmonary embolism. Now that doesn't sound like the flu to me. Heart attacks and strokes. People that are still saying that coronavirus is just the flu, I think are ridiculous, basically. But I just wanted to put that out there because there are quite a few things I've talked about here at Radio Albion about coronavirus that have then been confirmed 2 or 3 weeks later by the mainstream media. And this is one of them. But we're not going to talk about coronavirus today. We've actually got some talk about the lifting of the lockdown in Real Britannia, which will be on later on today. I've actually got a news article here about Lenny Henry, the race hustler, the black comedian who really wasn't that funny when he was in his heyday, and who now seems to spend most of his time agitating for white people to be replaced by black people on the television. And of course, we have learnt that in actual fact, blacks are far more represented on television than their percentage of the population. I think there are almost twice as many of them on television as they are for their percentage of the population. And of course, the BBC say that they still need to do more. They've also found that there are far more homosexuals on television than their percentage in the population. And if you believe the commercials that are on TV, you would believe that at least 50% of the country was black. It's only about 10%. I think non-whites, all together, non-whites, blacks, Chinese, all of them together, are probably about 17 to 20% of the country. We will have to see in the next census whether they still continue to show ethnicity, because of course they will be rather worried at the rapid increase in white genocide that's going on in the country. But Lenny Henry is in the news today complaining that white girls didn't wish to dance with him when he was a teenager. In a new interview, the comedian, 61, has opened up about the racism he faced growing up in the West Midlands. Racism that he faced growing up in the West Midlands 10, 20 years ago. When you heard about racism, you would have thought that that meant he must have been beaten up, he must have had stones thrown through his window, there must have been some kind of violence that was involved in this. But no, he's talking about girls not wishing to dance with him. So Lenny Henry has revealed girls would not dance with him as a young man because he was black. So he's just assumed that this is because he was black. I mean, it may have been that these girls didn't find him attractive. But of course, he's going to assume that that must be because he is black. Now, Lenny Henry has been married twice, and both his wives are white. So it rather looks as if Lenny Henry doesn't wish to date girls that are black either. So he's accusing these girls of doing something that he has refused to do himself. I can't recall any pictures of Lenny Henry having a black girlfriend. He was married to Dawn French for some time, and now he's married to another white woman. So what he's accusing these girls of doing, he is guilty of himself in refusing to get close to somebody who is black. Opening up about the racism he faced growing up in the West Midlands, the comedian and actor recalled women openly telling him they would reject him because of his skin colour. Now, why is that prejudice against somebody? How is that somebody thinking that they are above somebody else? It's just that they can recognise that he's actually a different subspecies to them. He actually comes from a different continent. He actually has a different biology to them. And surely it's quite within a person's, it's a matter of what they are attracted to. If they're not attracted to somebody because they look different to them, that's not racism. That's just a matter of taste, isn't it? And you would think that because we have these different races, that in actual fact, what that is telling us is that we have an instinct to be attracted to our own kind and not be attracted to anyone else. The natural default position is to be attracted to people who look like you. We have something called genetic similarity theory, which predicts that people will be attracted to people that have a high amount of heritable genes in common with themselves. And that's not just the same for people that they pick to marry, but also their friends as well. So we pick people that are similar to ourselves. We pick people that will look similar to ourselves and that will have similar characters to ourselves, because we like to surround ourselves with people with a large amount of the same inheritable genes that we have. And of course, your inheritable genes are your racial genes. That's a big part of it. So it's entirely natural that people will be attracted to their own kind, and entirely unnatural that people would be attracted to someone from another kind. If it was natural for us to be attracted to people from other races, there wouldn't be any other races. We would all just be a brown colour. There would be no diversity. Everybody would be exactly the same. Yet he's somehow feels that he's been slighted here because girls didn't want to go out with him because he was different to them. Well, why didn't he go and find some women that were like himself? I mean, the guy is being a real hypocrite here, if you ask me, because he's done exactly the same thing. The TV veteran, who has been dating theatre producer Lisa Makin since 2012, said, "I would ask anyone to dance. I didn't want to be left out, and my friends would be dancing. Some girls wouldn't dance with me because I was a black guy," says the black guy with a white girlfriend. Speaking on Louis Theroux's Grounded podcast, the media personality reflected on his experience with dating as a young man from an ethnic minority. Lenny, the son of Jamaican immigrants, shared, "If you wanted to meet members of the opposite sex, you've got to go to a place where they might be, and where they might be was St. Thomas's Disco next to the church. You would spend nearly all evening ignoring them, and in the last 5 minutes there would be this rush to the dance floor to try and slow dance with a girl." So he's ignored these girls all night, and then he tries to crush onto them at the last 5 minutes, trying to get a slow dance with him. And then when they say, "I don't want to dance with you," he accuses them of being racist. I mean, why would these girls want to have anything to do with him if he's been ignoring them all night? He's obviously just after one thing. He even admits that. The Magician's star said the boys would try to cram the whole dancing with the girl thing into the last minutes of the night, hoping they would get a snog. So in actual fact, these white girls that were refusing his advances, they were not wanting to have him try to French kiss him, basically. They were not wanting to get physically close to him. And I worry today that if blacks are trying to come on to white girls and they're not interested, I mean, they are putting themselves in a very dangerous position, aren't they? Because the black male that is trying to come on to the white female, when she signals that she is not interested, he's going to assume that it's racism. He's going to assume that it must be because she just has this irrational dislike of the colour of his skin. And, of course, that's going to irritate him. That's going to make him not very happy. And with the low emotional control that black people are known to have, they might very well force themselves upon the white girl. And because they feel that she's been racist, when in actual fact it may just be that she's not attracted to them. I mean, why on earth would a white person be attracted to a black person? They look completely different to us. The only way you could get the races to mix together is if you had a lot of brainwashing propaganda telling people that they were exactly the same as us. In actual fact, they've done tests where they look at children, and even very, very young children, rather than picking out a female of the opposite race, they will even pick out a male of their own race that they would rather be with. And what they do with these tests, they look at the look on the child's face to see whether the child is happy or whether the child is upset when they see these pictures. And children identify with their own race from about 6 months old, probably earlier than that. They feel safer with their own kind. They instinctively know that they are supposed to be with their own kind and not with somebody else's kind. It's not that they're prejudiced against black people. It's just that their instincts are telling them that they will be safer with their own kind. And of course, that's the truth of the matter, is that they will be safer with their own kind. Sir Lenny, he's actually been knighted. Sir Lenny of Henry added, "I would ask anyone to dance. I didn't want to be left out, and my friends would be dancing. Some girls wouldn't dance with me because I was a black guy." Well, he's just admitted there he would ask anyone to dance, not anybody that he thought liked him or anything like that. He was just after one thing here, and when these girls said we're not interested, he's got a chip on his shoulder and assumes that it must be because he's black. When asked by Theroux how he knew, the TV star confessed they would say. So they obviously didn't think what they were saying was racist. They thought it was just common sense. Well, why are you asking me to dance? I'm not black. Why aren't you asking black girls to dance with you, Lenny? Why are you trying to take me away from my own racist males? Because that's essentially what he's doing. He's trying to take away the white females from the white males. I mean, how would he feel if there were white people cracking on to the black girls at the dance? I'm sure he wouldn't feel very happy about it. He would instinctually feel that his black women were being taken away from his black people. There's actually a comment that somebody has left on this article, and they say, "I encountered Lenny Henry for a week when he was just 18 and starting on the working men's club circuit. If the girls didn't go with him, it is more likely because he was loud, noisy, constantly drawing attention to himself, and thus, for girls, rather embarrassing to be with." And I can believe that, because that's how he was in his comedy show. He was just loud and noisy and drawing attention to himself and not particularly funny. But the pressure on young girls today to race mix is just incredible. All the adverts that are on the television, this article here basically implying that if girls don't want to dance with a black guy, then they must be racist. It's, it must be very, very hard for young white girls that are in multicultural communities that don't want to date outside of their race, it must be very difficult for them to do so without being accused of being racist nowadays, which is tragic, really. I've got another news story that I think we've just about got enough time for here, and it's basically an example of how non-white cultures are completely different to our own, and we should expect there to be friction between their culture and ours when we import them into our country. And this particular news article comes from Pakistan. Pakistan judges rule it is okay to abduct and rape Christian girls. And of course, that's a bit of a contentious title there, a bit of a contentious headline. But that is what is going on here. This is Pakistan's judges have ruled that it's okay to abduct and rape Christian girls. This could have been an important legal precedent. It could have been an opportunity to finally do justice. Instead, it was yet another defeat. 3rd of February at 11 a.m. in Pakistan, the two judges of the High Court of Sindh, Muhammad Iqbal Kaloro and Irshad Ali Shah, so that's the High Court this is happening in, ruled that the marriage between Huma Yunus, a 14-year-old Catholic, and her abductor, the Muslim Abdul Jabbar, is valid. So this Muslim has kidnapped this Catholic girl, raped her, and then because he has raped her, he has said, "We are now married." And the judges have upheld this. The judgment was not based on the presumed legal age of the girl, as the kidnapper has claimed since the beginning of this affair. The marriage is valid because under Islamic law, Sharia law, a girl or even a child who has already had her first menstrual cycle is ready to get married. This golden rule is based on the life of the Prophet, who married one of his wives, Aisha, when she was only 6, but waited patiently for her first menstruation when she was 9 years old to consummate the marriage. And obviously the Prophet Muhammad is seen as the ideal man for Muslims. So obviously the ideal wife is somebody of 9 years old, which of course is going to cause friction when these people come over to our countries and wish to continue behaving like this. Obviously they are attracted to 9 year olds. We have people that are attracted to 9 year olds living in our society, and we don't think it predictable that they are then going to be involved in child abuse. I mean, we're not even talking about these grooming gangs here. What we're talking about is abduction and assuming that this girl is going to marry them. That's part of their culture. You can just kidnap a girl over there in Pakistan, and the judges will say, okay, yep, she's your spouse now. So Sharia law prevails, and it doesn't matter if it is in Sindh, the Karachi province. Since 2014, the Child Marriage Restraint Act prohibits the marriage of minors and also imposes a term of imprisonment for the adult spouse. So what's going on here? They've actually got a law that says that this shouldn't be going on. What is the point of formulating and approving laws if they can be gaily ignored as if it were still the 7th century? The point is to give Pakistan credit in the eyes of the international community, as Huma's parents' lawyer, Tabassum Yousaf, explained after the sentence. Cosmetic laws that have the sole purpose of allowing the Asian country not to lose out on development funds from the West, or benefits such as the generalized system of preferences, a preferential tariff system for trade with the European Union, granted to Pakistan by the EU. Such benefits often include human rights clauses. Formulating laws to protect them is an excellent ploy. So they basically, on paper, they've got a law to prevent this, so that they can get foreign aid from Europe, but in practice, they ignore it. What a pity, as this case shows. Sharia law prevails, and judicial rulings often reference verses from the Quran rather than civil laws, so they were able to just overturn this law by pointing to the Quran. How does one explain to a mother that her 14-year-old daughter can be legally raped every day? Mrs. Nagima Yunus was in tears yesterday before the High Court in Karachi. There had been high hopes for this case because for the first time, judges in a second instance court were called upon to give their opinion on a case of forced conversion. but no progress has been achieved because almost all the parents of the approximately 1,000 Christian or Hindu girls who are kidnapped, raped, forced to convert to Islam and marry the regressor every year in Pakistan have no resources to access justice and to combat the overwhelming social pressures, threats, and even the complicity of the local police with the Muslim abductors. So what they've got here is they've got complicity from the Muslim judges in this. And this is the sort of culture that the Muslims that we import into our country come from. This is just seen as normal behavior to them, abducting girls of another religion and forcing them to take on Islam. It may be that the victims of the grooming gangs, if they had converted to Islam, then the raping may have stopped. We do know that when the Muslims were taking the sex slaves in the 17th and the 18th century, if somebody converted to Islam, then they could no longer be a slave. And maybe that's one of the things that will be in the review, the official government review, that we have yet to see. That's one of the questions that needs to be answered. The role that religion has played in these grooming gangs. And it obviously plays a large role here in Pakistan as to whether Pakistani Muslims can just kidnap Christian girls, rape them, and effectively keep them as a sex slave for the rest of their lives. And of course, you can have multiple wives as well in Islam, so they could just keep the Catholic girl, force her to convert to Islam, and then marry somebody else that they, you know, that they really actually fall in love with, rather than somebody that they just want to rape. It's shocking to hear this to us, but this is just normal behavior to them in Pakistan. And we put value judgments on it and we say, well, this is wrong, but it's wrong by our standards, yes. But who's to say that it's wrong by their standards? This has been going on since the 7th century among the Muslims, and they haven't changed it. They obviously see this as this is just normal behavior, and they are attracted to 9-year-olds, basically. So how can we have these people in our countries without causing friction, without ending up with a two-tier justice system, which is what we effectively have? And how can we say that the people that point this out, the whistleblowers, they're somehow guilty of hate for pointing this out? The reason why we point this out is so that our people can resist against this and know what's really going on, especially the people that don't actually live among these Muslims, people that live in the diverse areas of the country. They are well aware of what the Muslims are doing, but the people that don't live in that part of the country, they're not going to hear about this anywhere else other than on places like Radio Albion and other alternative media outlets. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk Radio for the nationalist community.